Lovely, lovely,
Ooh,
jubbly.
we're back.
And hello.
Hello, with another episode of the Odd Jobs podcast with me, Kat Higgins, and your co-host, my co-host. Yay! Lovely stuff. We have a hell of an episode for you this week.
This was so much fun. It was just chaos. And we both
Wild.
love our guest very much. He's
We
brilliantly
do.
funny. And for some reason, Kat immediately starts attacking him.
Well, firstly, he deserved it. Secondly, it's a man, so what do you expect?
Our third man
Third? Yeah,
on
third man. And I would say
the podcast.
maybe, and no offense to the others, I don't think Dan, both Dans. We've only had Dans on.
Oh no, wait, fourth man, because Joss Norris as well.
Jaws! Oh my God, no. Ooh, didn't forget about Jaws at all. We had Dans and Jaws. Dan Wye, Danny Cohn, Jaws Norris, and now Sammy Abduardi, who is well able. If any of those boys, they're all quite soft and lovely boys. Sammy is well able for my bullshit, and that's why I gave it straight to him. He gives as good as he gets, so he's well able. But yeah, such a brilliant episode. Sammy tells us, well, you can listen in, but he talks about being a doctor. And let me tell you, there's a lot of odd jobs and a lot of stories about being a doctor. Some of the funniest stories I'd say we've
Yeah.
had on the pod.
It's one of the
Absolutely.
ones that we have because we quite often we've got comedians and so their strive, their journey is about trying to be a comedian and all, as we've said, the odd jobs alongside. Wow, that's the theme of the podcast. But
Yeah.
with Sammy, his odd job is being a
Being a doctor.
professional
He's an
doctor.
overachiever, 100%. He's like, it was my backup plan. I'm like, get fucked,
We talk
really.
about it in the episode, so you'll get to hear us really
You'll
berate
absolutely
for
get to
this.
see. And just as a quick heads up, slight trigger warning, we do, in one of the stories that Sammy tells about working as a doctor, it does touch on the subject of infant loss. There's no sort of intimate details or anything, but just to give a warning in case anyone wants to skip right past that part, it does come up at one point. But in general, it's just hilarious stories about his time as a doctor and all the wild things that he's dealt with in A&Es and surgery and all go on and so forth. So
Yeah.
I think without any further ado, we should get into the
So we can start.
Yeah, great.
Thank you for giving us
Thank you for
permission.
letting us. Do you know, you're one of the only
Hey,
men that's come on this
right?
podcast and straight out the gate, we've got
Right?
you telling us you can start your podcast
Coincidence? Yes.
now. No. Weirdly,
You
not
know what
at
they say?
all.
Not all men.
Yeah.
But this man, yes.
Yes. 100%.
I'm a pig.
And on that note, Sally Adewale, welcome to the Odd Jobs podcast.
Hi, welcome to me.
You are kind of welcome after that. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So, Sammy Abduari, you are a very successful writer, comedian, actor, character comedian, stand-up comedian.
Thank you.
But that's not what we're here to talk about.
No.
No. No. We are here to talk about all the odd jobs that have got you to where you are today as the creative cool man.
Great.
But first, we want to set the scene because you are actually a very good stand-up comedian
oh,
and writer
thank
and
you.
things, so we need to lay the groundwork.
Also, I was talking to Kat about this beforehand. I made this up? Were you a DJ at some point?
In my dreams, not.
I knew it. I was like, no, he's just a man.
A DJ.
So therefore,
I
has always
did.
wanted
Were
to
you in
be.
Edinburgh this year?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, I did 10 minutes of DJing in a night using my iPad.
Like a roast, one of those. Who's
no,
doing
no,
DJ battles?
It was the Gilded Balloon do a big party, and I was just let on to do 10 minutes.
Nice.
It was really fun. But no, I'm not
what
a
about,
DJ.
Was it during lockdown? Did you do some
oh,
DJ?
Oh, yeah! So you're not wrong.
Oh my God!
Okay,
He's
so
kind of, he
basically,
didn't even remember. Why am I supposed to
I
know?
Remembered. I was like,
13
that's
years ago. What date was it? 2025. 12 years ago.
Okay.
I was just browsing. I was living on the island of Jersey. Long story.
We'll get into it.
And I was like browsing like the sort of the classifieds, right? For to like selling, buying stuff, right?
Oh, okay.
That yeah, not yeah.
I don't know. You were stuck on an island in Jersey. Maybe things got dicey.
Yeah. Anyway. Anyways,
I clearly wasn't that far off.
No. Anyway, look.
He's mansplained and he's a creep.
No, I'm not a creep. I was looking for things to buy,
trolling
not
the
people to buy.
classifieds.
Like, Jesus wept. Okay, I was in Jersey and I found, I was on the classifieds because, okay, the reason I was on the classifieds is because there's a lot of rich people in Jersey
there who is, buy too avoiding much shit, tax.
Right? Yeah. And so there's always expensive shit available for very cheap.
Oh, that's very, I bet the charity shops are class.
Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah.
And so I randomly came across this guy listing 200 vinyls, two DJ quality turntables, decks, a mixer and speakers and an amp for £180.
Holy shit.
It was easily like over £1,500 worth.
That's a man who's giving up on a dream.
He was. So I got there. I was like, yes, I'll buy it. I got to his house and he was kind of like, he's kind of like passing it all on to me. He clearly, it was all in his basement and his wife made it clear it out.
Oh, okay.
And
women.
Right?
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, my wife's making me get rid of this because I've not used it in like a decade. But he was clearly a professional DJ in the 90s.
Yeah.
And he had like rare classic vinyls. And so I had a lot of shit. I used them about 10 times in the last 10 years because I don't know how to DJ properly with vinyl.
Yeah.
But I would play it occasionally just for fun. And it was really inspirational because you kind of listen to music you would never have access to otherwise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Spotify suggests stuff that you might, you know. And during lockdown, I was bored and I just put on a live stream. I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to DJ with these vinyls and share it with the world. And I did it once. And that's probably
what you saw.
I
clearly did tune in.
I was like,
that's such a niche thing to remember.
Sammy's a professional DJ. That was just what's in my head.
Well, you fooled one idiot. So.
So there you go. I've done it twice.
I'm fairly certain Sammy. I was like, I know Sammy kind of well. I really don't think so at all. Not at all. Okay, so, okay. Sammy Adewaru.
Professional DJ.
Writer, comedian, character actor, stand-up.
You won the recipient of the Heart Award at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year with your show Palestine Peace de Resistance. Oh, fuck.
Yeah. De Resistance. Winner of the Spirit Award.
Thank you.
For the same show in 2025.
And you won the Best of the Brighton Fringe Award, but for a different show.
For a different show,
for
yes.
a different show.
Yes. So I've won awards, which is a nice feeling.
You've won a multi-award winning.
I can say multi.
Comedian and writer.
I can say multi.
Yeah. Award winning, comedian and writer.
Yeah.
It's a fun
I like how you're like, oh, I can say multi. We were actually trying to give you the compliment. But yeah, by all means.
As in, I can now say multi.
Yeah,
I can,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
you, yeah, anyway. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Anyways, we're not here to talk about your multi-awards.
We're not here to we're here to talk about
all the odd jobs that you've done to get you on the way.
So as you know.
I do
and
know.
I think a lot of.
Wait, hold on. Yeah. This is our podcast.
I thought you were asking. I thought you wanted me to start.
No. Oh, to start. No. We will get it. We will let you.
Okay.
We have a structure.
Oh,
we have
right.
a plan. We're women. We plan things.
Oh, okay. Great. You know what? I'm going to sit back and enjoy.
Don't act like you aren't used to Irish women yelling at you. I know your
flashbacks,
family lineage.
Flashbacks.
I'm going to say this is the most aggressive Kat has been at the start.
It's one of the only men we've ever had on the podcast. Coincidence? I think not.
I like it.
No.
I like it. I think it's fun.
I know he's well able for it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But we're not here to ask you about all of your cool things that you do. I'm doing your bit.
You're doing this. Yeah, you take it away.
Okay, I'm going to do your hand as well. We're not here to ask you about all the cool jobs that you've done on the way. We're here to ask you about the odd jobs that got you there.
Great.
All the side hustles.
Yeah.
So
just go to the question. He's really keen to talk.
Okay. What was the first way that you earned money?
Oh.
Doesn't have to be like a proper job.
Someone clearly didn't read the email.
I'm a man. The first way I earned money was...
Doesn't have to be a job. Can be any like...
Anyway, that put money in your
job,
pocket.
It was a job. I worked like cashier at a restaurant. But I was a teenager.
Cashier at a
it
restaurant?
It was like, there was like... It was a particular structure in this restaurant where you had to like go in and eat and then... There was a cashier.
Oh, you pay on the way, on the way out.
Like
sorry,
Nando's.
I get you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in the cash register.
Yeah, yeah, right? I get you. Sorry, yeah.
And it was fine. It was fun. It was sort of in the middle of
what
the day.
What age are you?
About 15.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Middle of the day. And I grew up in Dubai.
Yeah.
So I was in Dubai. And it was hot outside and I was very sleepy all the time. So I did, unfortunately... fall asleep at work on more than one occasion. And so, yeah, I mean, that job was good. I didn't last very long. But
same. Yeah, I can imagine they're like, we kind of need the person who's in charge of making sure we take the money
yeah, yeah.
to be awake.
But at least I wasn't stealing because I was asleep. Yeah.
Right? No, but you were still losing money from the business. Still,
yeah, they lost a lot of money. Yeah, they lost more money than they paid me.
How many times did you get away with sleeping at work?
At least twice.
Okay.
And then I did an internship after that in London. Well, an internship. Basically, my brother worked for a TV company, and he was like, "Oh, can my brother come and like just hang out?"
Yeah, yeah.
And so he was like, and I really liked computers back then, so I was like, oh, "Can I work in the IT department?" I know. And
you had an in to TV.
Can I look at the computers?
That guy's going to be an award-winning comedian one day.
I did. It was a big TV. It was Viacom Showtime. It was like
shit.
In the middle of Oxford Street. And again,
can I go work in the room with no windows?
They're struggling to fill those positions. Those internships.
And I was like, no, let me crawl under some desks, which is what I had to do. Crawl under some desks and like pull some wires and shit and test stuff. I had no idea what I was doing.
Turn it on, turn it off again.
I mean, that's basically what it was. And then I fell asleep on more than one occasion in that internship as well.
How sleepy
And I actually got disciplined at that time by, I mean, my brother was like, dude, you can't, like, I was at a desk. I was at, they put me in a desk, obviously.
Yeah.
And mid 2 p.m., head down, like snoring and drooling, full of saliva.
Oh my God.
And I should do
this. Do speak into the microphone.
And I was kind of got into a bit of trouble, but how much trouble can you get in when you're not getting paid?
Yeah, fair. Your child labor at the end of the day.
So, fuck them.
I have so many questions about this narcolepsy that you seem to have going on.
I know, right?
Were you, surely you were still in school at this age. Were you falling asleep in school?
I'm trying to remember.
Or was it just
now.
When you were earning money or trying to earn a wage?
No, school, I remember feeling tired a lot at school. I guess I was a teenager and
teenagers famously
need more sleep.
Yeah.
And then when you start school at 8 a.m, you're not getting enough sleep. It's stupid. You shouldn't make teenagers start school at 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Or maybe even 10.
9:15.
Right? It's not natural. And that's I just needed a bit more and I didn't get it. So that's that. I went to a lot of different schools as well. I went to like 8 or 9 different schools.
No wonder you were so tired.
And I missed a bunch of school as well. It was pretty interesting. Pretty interesting times.
Were all the schools in Dubai?
Most of them were.
And you would
very briefly one was in London and then in and out and then in the Middle East.
Did you enjoy being like the new kid?
So when you're the new kid, your entire childhood, you end up learning ways to sort of to fit in very quickly.
Yeah.
And my way was making people laugh, but specifically beatboxing silly noises.
Yes.
And making silly
noises.
You are
a good beatboxer.
And so that's how I fit in. That's how I made people laugh. And then I had this thing where I would like, this probably wasn't very intelligent, but I'd like for some reason find the biggest bully and then just publicly mock them in front of everyone else at my own expense. I had big pieces of furniture thrown at me by like these big tough guys because I would pretend to be a robot and like, you know, call them like a pussy or something.
Yeah.
Like, pussy detector. That's
one way to
robot.
Get your name in people's mouths.
I know, right? Yeah. And so it could kind of go all right if
Was that directly linked to why you had to move so many times?
Yeah.
No, that was just... Oh, not this again, Sam.
I can see where you're getting to, but yeah.
Not the pussy detector robot again. But that was really funny, though. It was really funny.
In that teenage boy way, you're like, this is hilarious.
Or in the adult man way. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm going to publicly call him a pussy.
It's still really funny. And I took a great pleasure in doing that. And I think I still do in a way. It's fun to make fun of like big nasty bullies, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I'm kind of painting myself as this kind of like Robin Hood character. I wasn't a good person. Let's face it, none of us are good people.
I don't think anyone was thinking you were going after the bully to save
great
the victims.
Guy.
Very much for you to then just be antagonistic. Yeah.
It was just fun, basically.
Just a wind up.
Yeah.
So that was your shtick.
Yeah, that was my thing.
Do you remember any of your robot moves? Because I'm imagining seeing your shows, I'm imagining a long build up of you being a robot, scanning them and stuff, and beep boops.
A good act out.
Before you eventually call them a pussy.
I went full method. Let's just put it that way. Daniel Day-Lewis like could study things.
He used
things
the IT and it was why he so many computers.
I wanted to know how they worked. Yeah. So yeah, that's why I moved. No, that's not why I moved schools so many times. But I did. No, we just moved around a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah,
and moved cities quite a lot. So I had to just change schools. I went to a lot of schools. I went to a school in a town, a very small town that served an oil refinery in the middle of the desert, in the middle of the empty quarter, which is about 200 miles from the nearest civilization. So no town, no city.
Literally nothing.
A couple of hundred miles.
Well, Dubai is a city that was like nothing and then it was just built. Yeah,
but this is like way on the other side of the country.
Assuming when you leave it, like...
And that was interesting. That was really interesting. It was great for an eight-year-old because you could just walk around. Nobody's going to do anything.
Yeah.
Although in that town, strangely, riding a bicycle was illegal. You were not allowed to ride a bicycle if you were under the age of 16. It was so stupid. I had to like...
Surely that made so much...
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's exactly the type of place where like a bike would be an amazing method of transport.
Don't ask for logic in these situations.
Right.
So the police would basically, if they could catch you, they would stop you and like confiscate your bike. Just take your bike away. Bear in mind, this is the same police force that when I was at school... The policeman came for like a tell us what your job is day,
Yeah.
And he came, and all the boys, I can't remember if we were segregated at that time or not, as in by sex.
Yeah.
I think it was an all boys class. And policeman comes in, and all the boys are like, wow, what do you do? And he's like, let me show you what I do. Takes his Magnum revolver out and goes, you see this gun? And all the boys are like, wow. He goes, I can shoot a man with this gun and the bullet will go through him and kill the man standing behind him. And then we were like, wow.
He was like, I know what these boys want to hear.
Yeah. He knew his audience.
Yeah.
But just that's the kind of town it was.
Right.
But it was very safe because we had the man with the revolver.
I was about to say,
basically,
man with the revolver and the two body bullet. Yeah. That was not a Garda came in. To a Garda Síochána, like the Irish police officer came into my primary school class when we were younger. I believe it came in a few times. I remember his name was Garda Jacob, and for health and safety, for things, I think it was around like bonfire night and fireworks to be like, don't hold fireworks and set fires up. Let me tell you, Garda Jacob wasn't swinging around a Magnum. It was a very different vibe in the Irish countryside. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
Can I ask a really silly question about the bikes?
Yeah, please.
Did that go for tricycles and unicycles as well? Was it just any wheel?
I didn't test that. No. I didn't have access to either of those items, unfortunately. But the town is still there.
Rollerblades?
I rollerbladed. I know I started rollerblading a couple of years later. I was actually rollerblading the day I found out Princess Diana died. And I was thinking about this recently because
line. What a line, Sammy.
Because... No, I was in a skate park. I was about whatever it is, 12 years old.
This is a podcast about jobs, and now we're talking about roller skating while Princess Diana died. Go on.
And then I was doing. There's a double half pipe, right? It's like a whoo, whoo, right?
Okay.
And I was just going, and we had to take turns. And then a guy turns to me. I was like waiting in queue to take my turn on the double half pipe, and it was almost. And he goes, "Oh, Princess Diana died. My mum's really sad and crying." I went, all right then, and I just instantly enjoying the ramp.
Well, you remember it.
I know. Well, I mean, yeah, right.
Well, life is full of ups and downs. So.
I know.
Yeah,
right? As Diana knows very well.
I was guessing. Swings and roundabouts. Were you in a park?
I was writing. I was doing a bit of writing the other day with a colleague. A colleague. I write with him, and we're writing a scene for screen. And in the scene, one of the characters is dressed as Prince Diana, the lead comic character, is in a fancy dress party dressed as Princess Diana. And I was like, this is fucking hilarious. This is so funny. And he was like, he's English, right?
Yeah.
And he was like, but like, you know, some people might be like, I was like, what? And what? Who? Why? This is hilarious. And apparently, English people have a bit of a sensitivity around like dressing up as Princess Diana. Is that true?
I feel like no one would like the idea of her being mocked. She's very much someone who has been, I think, like like almost ratified, like after, yeah. She is very much held as like a saint of the British people.
People do,
even though I'm like, oh, right, if we look into it, I don't know. Like, she was great and great for, as far as the royal family goes, the best of the
one
bunch.
Of the, yeah, one of the good
110. But yeah, I don't know. in general, but I don't think they. I think it would be that. I think she is the pinnacle, and I take issue with the whole phrase of speaking ill of the dead. Come see my show in memory of me. It's all about this. But I think she is the height of someone. I probably yourself tell jokes about the Queen on stage and like mocked her after
her
death.
I once told a joke about eating the Queen's pussy.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like they're kind of fine with that. But Diana, it would just be seen as being. Like beyond the pale.
Yeah, you can't. Mm. Yeah, but that's juicy then, isn't it? Because you want to kind
I
of.
I know.
You want to
well,
kind
especially
of,
someone like you.
I don't know what you're implying.
What's the biggest bully in the class? Oh, this is the most sensitive topic in British culture. Let me go after
that's
that.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Right.
Sammy's right there.
Anyway, where were we?
Wait. Okay. This is where we are. You're back. You're rollerblading around, whatever else. When you were a child, and I do know we'll get into this of what your job is alongside being a comedy writer. But what did you want to be when you were a child? When you were around
to be
that
an
age?
Oh no! First, I wanted to be a marine biologist.
Everyone,
right?
Everyone.
So weirdly specific.
I know you? One. I have a friend who is a marine biologist, and I'm like, you're like a man from a book.
I know. Well, marine biologists. I grew up in Southampton, so we have a whole marine biologist centre. Like, there's a whole like uni
right,
down
okay,
there.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a shoo-in for you. That's easy for you. Yeah. For us, I didn't have any.
You
reference
were in the
point.
Desert.
I was
had
in the
had you even
desert.
Seen the sea?
I had to, yeah. Right. I didn't know. Yeah. I just saw him like dreams.
Yeah.
The idea.
Yeah. It was harder to want to be a marine
what
biologist.
Was? Because everyone of yeah. like a certain generation has the marine yeah. biologist thing. Like America, it spans yeah. culture. I'm like, and yet. There isn't one book or one movie that like dictates it to people. So I'm like, who was doing the PR for marine biology back in the day?
It there must be big marine biology.
Because it's Finding Nemo. Cultures. You were in Dubai, I was in Ireland.
Yeah.
No, we're before Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
I was huge. A big film I was into when I was about 3-4 years old was Free Willy. And that was about freeing the orca and
yeah.
whatever else.
Yeah.
But like,
I don't know.
It just spanned.
The Little Mermaid. Maybe it was like just a slow drip.
Drip.
Little
Save
Mermaid.
The oceans.
Save the oceans, Free Willy, as you say.
Yeah, the Great Barrier Reef. I remember
yeah,
learning about that.
Yeah, that was
that
in
lot.
The news. And now like the Great Barrier Reef is dead, and we're not even talking about it.
No.
It's insane.
It's mad. But I remember that was a huge thing back in the day.
Yeah. Okay. So marine biologist. And then astronaut. But serious. Like, I was seriously researching how I could end up being an astronaut in space. It wasn't like
what age? So it wasn't
I was
like
13.
When you...
I was 13. Okay. I was mature enough
so you're
to know
like
what's
up. Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
And I would. There was a website. It's still up. It's called space.com, and you go
great
on it.
Great domain.
And it
I was about to be like, how does he still remember? Space.com's hard to remember, is it?
And they track all of the launches, and I would log in every day and track the launches and like watch the launches and find out what's up
wow,
in space.
Okay.
This is before like launches were just routine, and I really wanted, and then I kind of slowly dawned on me that because I didn't have American citizenship and I wasn't going to join the British military,
no.
I wasn't going to have a look in to becoming an astronaut as a civilian.
There's an Irish astronaut.
Is there?
Yeah, but I think I should know more about the Irish astronaut, but I don't. But I think they're over in America. But there's a space program now that like,
right.
isn't
Maybe
there,
that
like is international
time.
People and stuff. Well, they
after
put women in space now. They weren't doing that back in the day.
That's true.
They've really let the standards drop.
No, I think women in space were in the 80s. I think, if I recall correctly. I think one of the Challenger crew that died was a woman, but please fact check me on that.
I think, yeah.
Yes, that is true. But also, well, Katy Perry's recently been up in space.
I know, what an achievement for humanity, right? What a great achievement. I'm so glad we did that. It was, I was just like, when is she going to do it? When is she going to go up into space?
She did.
You know?
She did write that song, Firework. And, what's the song? She's some song about
I wish
space.
She was on a firework.
What I loved is that she came out of that, honest to God. She came out of that and kissed the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was up there for 20 minutes or some shit like that, wasn't it? It was like a very quick up and down
like
job.
A pirate landing on land.
I'm like...
like a,
as though they'd been at
like
sea.
Like a shipwreck. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
As though you'd been at sea, but you were gone for
and
like
she,
an hour.
She took up a flower and she sung for everyone while she was up
there. To promote her tour.
To promote her
tour. That's what she did while she was up there. She heard Daisy is the name. She had like a daisy and her tour was called something
of course
tour.
She's going up to space to promote something.
A tour, yeah. Yeah.
Most people go up to space. There's a phenomenon, all astronauts to go up into space and see the Earth from high above have that sort of mental change, right? They come back down and they're like, okay, nation states are all bullshit. This is all bullshit.
Yeah,
we need
to
stop what we're doing. The earth is all one, right?
Yeah.
I didn't see that in Katy Perry.
No. No.
I didn't see her realize that.
No,
if anything,
maybe it was because Jeff Bezos paid for her to go up there.
Right. And then those guys had to graft
exactly.
for decades.
Exactly.
Just to get.
Also, they didn't go up for 20. She was like weightless for like 5 minutes or some shit like this. So I don't even know if they were high enough up.
Yeah, for long enough
to have
look,
orbited
to look
the world
down.
And seen to have the dawning. I'm sure she says she had
and
that.
And she was still thinking about PR while she was up there. Like, she's not.
Yeah.
She's not opened her mind.
No. So astronaut, but then you were sort of like, that's not going to happen for me.
Realized it's not going to happen. And then it got boring. I was like, well, you know, I don't, we're not like, you know, rich. And so, I knew that I would have to just work.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I
yeah.
couldn't like risk stuff. I couldn't be risky with my life. I had to like find something a bit secure.
Yeah.
Because I knew like once I was an adult, I would have to just sort myself out very quickly.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to get into, basically, I wanted to study like something like maths or physics or something at uni. And then my friend's dad, who's a doctor, came to our school and gave a talk about what it's like being a doctor. And I thought, hey, I get to work with people if I do that, and I don't have to work in an office, which was really important to me. At the age of 16, I was like, I knew I didn't want to work in an office.
Yeah.
I knew I was good at science. So I was like, I think I want to do medicine. I'll apply for it and see what I get.
Yeah.
And I applied for it and I got into medical school, and I went to medical school and had an interesting time. I didn't love medical school.
Do people love medical school?
Yeah. I mean, I liked a lot of the social aspects of it.
Okay,
the medical
yeah.
school itself was just not. I basically managed to sort of get through quite well by the end without really trying very hard, which is nice.
Yeah. Always what you want to hear from a doctor.
I know, right? Hey, I've passed. I don't know how I passed.
C's get degrees.
Well, it's good that I'm not working as a doctor anymore. No, so I haven't
But we
worked.
Should say you are a fully qualified doctor.
I mean, I'm a fully qualified doctor.
When I first met you were still working in A&E and all. You worked during COVID and everything else.
I worked through COVID. Yeah. I've been a doctor for a while.
So you were one of those people, when I was banging my saucepan, I was like, this is for Sammy.
And I did really, thank you. Without those saucepans being banged.
You wouldn't have made it through.
I would have killed myself. I was on the verge of suicide, but somebody banged a saucepan.
There you go.
And it just kept me going.
And there you are. You were buoyant.
Thank you. Thank
to keep going.
Thank you. I just stood there bowing while people in the street banged on there.
When we used to do that, I was like, it must feel so fucking weird to actually be a healthcare
worker. Vote for people who fund the NHS. Don't bang on saucepans, you fucks.
Imagine the war where they're banging. They're all. Everyone's just looking at each other and like, those fucking guns.
No, it was nice. It was nice. I don't have any ill will towards the saucepan bangers. No, I think it's a very, very nice thing to do.
Who started that? Who was the first person to
bang a saucepan in the history of humanity? Yeah. Just dunk, dunk,
dunk. I think it was that thing of like, it was that time, right? Weirdly, I don't know, and again, you were a doctor in hospital, so probably had the exact opposite experience. But I feel like I remember like early the first lockdown, that like March 2020 thing. That was really scary, but then like it really felt like in like April, May of that era, like quite hopeful about the world, because I was like, this is going to give people a lot of perspective. And all of a sudden the shift of like key workers and like delivery workers and grocery workers and healthcare, I was like, all of a sudden now we have realized all of these tech companies, all of these politicians, all of them are bullshit. Society does not need them in the way that we need this. Yeah. The economy can suffer, we'll recover the economy. This is what we need as human beings. This is getting us back to the essence. So I feel like the banging on the saucepans was like genuinely trying to be like that want of like to show you guys how grateful we were but to not be able to do any congregating.
Yeah.
It felt like a protest.
It did feel like everyone was together, actually.
Yes,
there was a lot of togetherness.
It was very communal.
Yeah.
And it was weird. Like, I lived in a flat and I, like, vaguely knew, like, the people just below us and next door. But in COVID, that, like, thing, we'd go out on our balconies and, like, we'd, like, weirdly all got to know the building. And then we'd all share food and, like, help each other out. And we realized, like, there's this really elderly neighbor and we all, like, share. Like, it genuinely made me be like, oh, my God, this is going to bring back community and stuff. And then, where did it go? It went on too long. It went on too long. You guys didn't fix it quick enough.
I know, right? I'm really sorry.
But yeah, so I feel like the pot banging, I think we like mock it now, but I'm like, I actually remember it feeling like very
It was a strange
powerful.
Time. It felt like the world, even because I worked through the pandemic, but a big part of my life ended because half of my work was comedy even at that time. And that just disappeared, obviously, for all of us, really. And it was hard. It felt like the world was ending in a way, right?
Yeah.
And what was I watching recently? Someone was like, oh, if the world is... How would you feel if you knew the world was going to end in like a week? Or what would you do right now?
Yeah.
And it's like, it felt a little bit like that.
Yeah.
Like I ended up... I lost my mind a little bit. I think we all lost our mind a little bit.
Yeah.
I remember going into lockdown, getting COVID in March 2020 before the government even recognized like that lockdown was needed.
Yeah.
I got it at work, obviously. And I went into isolation for 10 days and I came out of isolation to lockdown. And I went in, so everything was like normal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I came out and there was a queue outside Sainsbury's and it felt like I was waking up in a post-apocalyptic
like
world.
Like the beginning of 28 Days Later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was pretty disturbing. And I spent a lot of time on my own because I live on my own.
Yeah.
So that wasn't good.
No.
That wasn't good.
I lived on my own in lockdown as well. And
oh my God.
I feel like for extroverts as well in particular.
It was bad.
People were like, are you okay? And I was like, I don't know.
I don't even know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
I remember we got to the stage where it was like my fifth fucking isolation with flu or COVID or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And each isolation, my brain would just sort of unwrap a little bit more and it would just become this loose sort of octopus. And there was one stage where I was in isolation on my own and I just started filming myself. I just set up a camera, not to like put it online.
No.
I just like, I need to know that I'm sane. So I just set up my camera in the corner of the room and I just filmed myself just going about and like talking to myself as I was doing before I was filming.
Yeah.
And just cooking and like tidying and stuff. And it was like, I need to see myself from an outside perspective. I don't feel real anymore.
Yeah.
It was like,
it's almost like you're like, I haven't been perceived. So is this?
Yeah. Am I real?
Yeah, 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 yeah. 100%. Yeah, yeah. But anyways, sorry. We don't need to talk about lockdown and how bad that was. I was like, you're a doctor, lockdown. So you then went on to be a doctor. And I feel like nobody I know has better workplace stories than medical professionals. I feel like you have seen it all.
The question is, which ones am I allowed to tell you?
Yeah.
On a public forum.
We have a Patreon. We can put things behind a paywall if you need.
If you want the juicy stuff, pay.
This is probably a mad question to ask you, again, being a doctor and stuff, because like what level is what? But what is the most like inappropriate thing that you've seen? Either maybe for like a medical professional to do to a patient or a patient has done or...
So we had at medical school, I was on the obs and gynae rotation.
And of course you were. Sly dog.
We all had to do it.
The pussy robot ends up right back there.
Time for the pussy robot.
Did you do the robot when you walked in? Yeah.
Hello, may I examine you? And no. There was a consultant who came out of retirement back in who was very, very old. And he was very, very funny. He didn't give a shit. He didn't care. He cared about the patients.
He delivered
very good care. But in terms of like social,
and
he would gather all the students round, like in the middle of the ward, like a little circle. There'd be like six of us, and he'd be like imparting his wisdom. He was easily approaching 80 or over 80.
Okay,
so
right.
Very elderly man, and he would talk, and he had Parkinson's as well. And he would talk like he would tell us stories of patients he had seen, and he goes, yes, I saw this one couple who didn't quite understand that, ejaculating inside the vagina would lead to pregnancy. So in the consultation, I took the husband aside and I said to him, you know, you should think about maybe ejaculating on her breasts or ejaculating somewhere else entirely. And he was like deadpan, posh, 80-year-old posh consultant, and we were standing there and I was like trying not to laugh and like making eye contact with my mate. And of course there's always like a lot of medical students are quite naive as well, so there were two or three in that circle who were like really like learning about coming on tits from
this 80-year-old from this. Oh my god, who's got Parkinson's? Yeah,
you can come on tits if you like. Yeah,
that was
very
that man's
nice.
First suggestion.
Yeah. Tits straight away. Yeah. Try the back. I don't know. tissue maybe. Was, who knows?
I'm pretty sure. God rest his soul. He's probably dead now. And
well, we know how him and his wife did birth control.
He just came too hard and he just died. And
also, can we just say? I feel like an elderly man, so like obs and gynae, I feel like is a field that in the last 50, 60 years has probably changed a lot in terms of like how they do, learnings. And even still, I feel like probably has a long way to go. So someone who is that old in that field and also has Parkinson's, the last thing I want from a man who's up my cervix. You know what I mean? Like, the last thing.
We used to joke that him stitching up a cesarean was like those video games where it's like going, you have to click at the right moment.
Oh my God.
Nope, missed. Nope, missed. Nope, missed. Now, yes, good, got it. Next stitch.
This is what I mean. It women have more childbirth and all of everything got to do with ups and downs. You're already, it's horrific.
It's terrible.
And oh my God, I would be so, I feel like that's a field where I would be very ageist about the person. Even though I'm aware it probably doesn't always trend that way. Like young people can be, you know, have old views or like uneducated or whatever else. But I feel like ups and downs, I'm like, as a woman, I'm like, I feel like in the last 20 years, they've recognized, I don't know, that endometriosis is the PCOS, whatever else.
A lot of progress.
So I'm like, nah, I don't want anyone who hasn't been fresh out of schooling. I want someone who's come straight from the books. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You don't want a consultant who comes on tits.
It's telling my husband to. How's about you ask me?
Otherwise...
Yeah, that's wildly inappropriate.
Did you and your mate manage to keep it together? Because I feel like once you make eye contact with someone...
Tears. I had tears. He knew the guy, the consultant, he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
He knew, like, I told him, like, to come on the tits. And then they didn't laugh.
Well, he's there going, I have so much authority. Is anyone going to call me on this?
I love it.
Yeah.
And I respect that. I respect that.
Well, of course you do.
Of course I do.
Call me on tits. That's what I was like. I respect it.
I see another man of my caliber.
Did you show him the pussy robot?
Watch this. They're called robots.
Oh my God. So that is the thing as well with becoming a doctor. You do all the different rotations.
Yeah.
What was the best? What was the worst?
I for a period I wanted to be a plastic surgeon when I was at medical school, and I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the plastic surgery rotation that I had the most.
Okay.
Because...
Are you going to be like, because saving burn victims? Or are you going to be honest and be like, I get to see tits?
Actually, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. No, it's because it was just the technical stuff. I just really liked the sort of technical aspect.
The medicine of it all?
Like the physical kind of like where you put you cut and then stitch and then, because it's all very like Lego, right?
Right.
I like that a lot.
And also surgeon, not medical.
That was plastic surgery. I wasn't attracted to any other kind of surgery.
Okay.
Really that much. And then I realized that, so basically, if you want to become a plastic surgeon in this country, you have to give up quite a few years of your life to build up your CV to apply to get into training, to then do 10 to 15 years.
Okay, it's a long path.
Plastic surgery. It's not just like a lifetime commitment. Obviously, you go into medicine, you're probably going to be doing it for the rest of your life. But it was more than that. It was a lot of commitment and I met a lot of people who wanted to go into plastics who were like in their third or fourth year of applying to after medical school and before getting a training, who keep getting rejected.
Oh, wow.
And I was like,
Is it because there's very few trainings?
Yeah, when I was applying, there was like 10 in the whole country. And then, so I didn't do plastics. However, by that stage, I had already knew kind of deep down in the back of my mind, I wanted to go to drama school initially. And then this is boring, but this is what happened. I halfway through med school, I was going to drop out and apply for drama school, and it was the 2008 financial crisis, so I couldn't even. I was like, I was just going to pay my. I was going to get a bar job, whatever. And I was like, oh, no bar jobs, no restaurant jobs, no service sector, nothing. Cannot work. Yeah. And I was like, well, if I stay in med school, I've got a job. That was the logic behind it. So I stayed in med school and I worked for 4 years, and I saved up enough to go to Goliath and clown school in France. Did that for a couple of years, and I've just been doing comedy since, basically. So that's the boring story.
It is so funny. Like, this is why I was like, we need to get somebody on the podcast as well when you message, because I was like, your odd job is being a doctor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'll be honest, we've had a lot of hospitality jobs.
Yeah.
I say nanny, childcare, all these things. I'm like, no one's like, oh, my fallback plan is doctor, being a fully qualified doctor.
Yeah.
Like, it's hilarious.
It's no longer my
me.
Fallback. I've now turned my back on it. Potentially.
Close that door, shut it.
Yeah. I just came out of a weird...
Deregister? Do you have to deregister
something like that? I'm going
to
do something like that. I wouldn't mind doing it like dramatically, maybe. Ooh. I don't know, sending a picture of my asshole to the GMC or something.
Wow, but, really? Okay.
That's the least they deserve. I fucking hate those guys. And you could put this on Instagram. I fucking hate the GMC.
Are they... Am I right in thinking... Because my mum's a nurse. Are they the group that you have to like give them money to be registered?
Yeah, so they...
And they sort of oversee...
Yeah, they started out as a register, like a list of doctors.
Yes.
And now it's massive overreach.
Yes.
They're running training. And so what their most recent thing is, there was a doctor about 8 years ago. She was a peds trainee who was put it. She came like first few days back from mat leave in peds A&E.
Oh,
wow. And she was left alone, basically. And a child sadly got very, very ill and died while she was on shift. And that is, you know, it's very, very sad, but it does happen.
Yeah.
And basically her consultant, left the country because he knew he was Irish and went back to Ireland. and he just skied out. He just went, yeah, fuck this, and he left, and he's like, I'm not coming back. And then the GMC.
Wait, because he knew he was on the hook.
I think he knew he was in trouble
because
yeah.
he should have been. Yeah. I'm sure she messaged him. Yeah, whatever yeah, else yeah, he was yeah, on call, yeah. he didn't show
so
up.
So there
yeah,
were a
yeah.
lot of things that went wrong. It wasn't just him. It was like there were understaffing
the
on the medical
failed.
Side, understaffing on the nursing side.
Yeah.
They couldn't keep up. And I believe the child in question was also very, very unwell to start with as a baseline. Anyway, the upshot is that the GMC then took an unprecedented move to criminally prosecute the woman who was an immigrant and a Muslim and black, basically. And she was like it was terrible. It was fucking atrocious.
Fucking
and
hell.
She
criminally convicted doctor.
Yeah. So it's one thing to go, oh, you fucked up. We're gonna
professionally
put you
sanction
and
you.
We'll take your rail.
Yeah, yeah.
So they tried to send her to prison, and that had never happened before, and that sent shockwaves. So I fucking hate the GMC.
Oh my God. Yeah. Two fucking right. Fuck those guys. I used to live with a doctor as well, and she had her fucking huge issues as well, because she was also from like quite a working class background as well. And so she was like, so much of this shit is like, again, like, and she was like, the NHS is so full of like, and being a doctor, I think in particular, there's like, it's either sort of, people from quite wealthy, posh backgrounds and stuff like this, and then immigrants.
Yeah.
And not English, not first speaking or whatever else. And she's like, and it is a two-tier system in terms of like, that wouldn't
big
have happened
time.
If she was like white and English and whatever else. Oh my God, fuck those guys as well.
Right.
100%.
Yeah, it's hard to find funny stuff to talk about with the GMC.
But wait, so who are, when we were saying about your rotation, so yeah, I was saying that being a doctor is a great odd job, but what was the best rotation that you did, even if it wasn't the thing that you pursued?
So the best, I really loved, as I said, plastic surgery. And then I did like A&E is always fun when you're a medical student, because it's like, wow, I get to do stuff and see
a
real
bit of
patient do a bit of everything. But then working in A&E is a very different, and once you've qualified and you actually have responsibility, that's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. It's like being put in a fucking washing machine and you're just being shaken all the time and you don't know what the fuck is happening. I remember during one A&E shift, and what A&E do, right? They have rotas where they're constantly changing your hours in order to cover their things. So it's like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm like, you're on the morning shift. Then the next 3 days you're on the later, like afternoon shift. Then the next 3 days you're on, and they keep on pushing your hours back. You, by the end of your 4 months on A&E working as a doctor, you don't know whether your asshole or your mouth your opening. You know what I'm saying? And I remember this one moment. I was near the end of my A&E rotation, straight out of med school, and I was sat there. It was probably 4 a.m., the worst time. And I sat there with a patient, like, taking the history. I was like, yeah, so tell me. And then suddenly I was looking down on myself. I was outside my own body, looking at the consultation unfolding in front of me.
Oh my God.
And I was like, okay.
Literally had an out-of-body experience.
I think I need to I think I need to go. Also, during my first ever set of surgical night shifts, when I was a brand new doctor, I still hadn't quite got used to nights, right?
Yeah.
But like medical nights.
And you are famously a sleepy boy.
I'm a sleepy boy.
You're a very famously sleepy boy.
People know that about me now, back then. But this is another sleepy story. I was on surgical nights. Now, surgical nights, especially back then, would be like you clock in at 9 p.m. and then you see new patients until 9 a.m. You're continuously seeing admissions, surgical admissions.
Oh, so like people who come in overnight.
So you come in, if you have a problem we think is surgical, I have to take a history, I have to examine you, I have to send your blood, take your bloods, send the bloods, look at the blood tests, make sure it's all safe, put it in the... It's a little work.
So it's intake.
And you keep going, you keep going until... And so I was just, I hit the ground running at 9 p.m. It was the first night shift, which is always the hardest.
Yeah.
Because you haven't adjusted. And I remember this sweet old lady who was in Scotland. A sweet old lady came in. It was like 5 a.m. She had some tummy pain. And I sat down. She was in her bed. And I sat down and I had the little table, the hospital table where they eat their lunch and stuff. And I put her notes. And I said, and I got my pen out. And I said, so tell me why you've come into hospital today. And then my next memory was me opening my eyes. I was like, tell me why you've... Like that. And I didn't know where I was, and she was just sat there patiently in front of me, and I said, "I'm so sorry, I fell asleep. I know you. This is so embarrassing. This is really bad. Like I'm your doctor, fell asleep at you. Like I wasn't. It was like
mid consultation.
Like questions and really." Slumped over like I had you know some kind of.
Do you know how long you were out for?
And then she goes, don't worry about it. It's okay. Don't worry about it. I was like, oh, so thank you. So I said, please, sorry, continue. Why have you come into hospital today?
No,
and
Sammy.
The next memory was me opening my eyes again. It happened the second time it happened, I was like, I give up. I'm sorry.
That's a horrible review of that woman.
I was going to say, then you actually listened to her and you were like, yeah, this is born as shit. That's actually what's wrong.
I was in Aberdeen, right? The first time, my first patient in Aberdeen, the first patient I ever saw straight out of med school. I sit down and I go, it was an elective admission for a procedure. I go, so tell me, tell me why you've come into hospital today. You know, what are you having done? And then like shapes of words come out of my mouth.
Oh yeah. Aberdeen.
Blah, 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 blah. And I go, I'm so sorry. Could you say that again? Yeah. And he smiles and he goes, blah, 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 blah. And I go, let's just try one more time. And I go, listen, please.
Yeah.
Work with me here.
Yeah.
I'm your doctor. Look where we are. We're in Aberdeen. It's not great, you know. And it's not, by the way, and I stand by that. But anyway.
Aberdeen.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to argue that too much.
Aberdonians will. and the third time, the sort of shapes and animals and colors came out of his mouth, and I didn't know what they were. And so I said, excuse me one moment. I got up, I went back to the doctor's office, and there was a doctor who was a year above me who's from Glasgow.
Right.
And I said to her, listen, you're just going to have to see this patient. I can't do this. I can't understand a word because the Aberdonian, I can understand Scottish very well.
Yeah, but
the Aberdonian
it's different.
accent is a different, and it's actually a bit of a different language. That was my first ever patient. I don't think I was very popular in Aberdeen.
I was going to say.
The doctor who fell asleep on me. That's not even an Aberdonian accent.
But he couldn't understand a word I was saying.
How was patient number two then? Walking into the next one where you're like,
did you do any medicine in Aberdeen?
No, I tried not to.
Clearly.
I tried not to. Christ, I've got stories. I was on the gastrointestinal ward, which is where all the people with end-stage alcoholic liver disease go.
Yeah.
And a very common thing, at least on that ward, was a lot of the people coming in with... I haven't done medicine for such a long time. I forgot what it's called. Hepatic encephalopathy is when you got really bad. You've got terrible.
Hepatic encephalopathy.
Oh, yeah, I know all about
it. I know because I've watched 21 seasons of Grey's Anatomy. So.
Great. It's basically.
You and I are basically the same.
Well, you might as well. You could take my job, to be honest. I wish you would.
My friend Grace, or my old housemate Grace, who was a doctor, she was like, Catherine, I genuinely think a pair of scrubs on you, you could do a shift in A&E. Like, I don't think it would get flagged.
I don't disagree.
And I was like, I think I'm pretty good
I think
at
you'd
most.
Be fine.
I'm really good with I said this on the podcast that I'm like I would actually love to a bit I would have loved to have been a doctor but I was never that was never on the cards academically but if I didn't like comedy I would retrain as a paramedic because I'm good in
I can 100% see you. I feel like I've met you in that life.
As a paramedic, 100%.
Yeah. 100%.
And, she was like, yeah, no, you could get away with a good shift or whatever else. Yeah. Because she'd be like, weird, why do you always know the turn? Like, she'd be like, oh, I'm worried today. We'd do this chest CT, basically. And I was like, yeah, yeah, you just get imaging and da da da. And I was like, was this potassium high? And she's like, the fuck? I'm like, it's Grey's Anatomy.
How do you know that? I used to get really nervous when I was working in A&E because I would often want to ask out the paramedics, but I didn't know what the etiquette was.
What is it? Because I feel, again, yeah. my friend, there's a lot of fucking going on in hospitals.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you mean you didn't know the etiquette?
Like, I didn't...
You have
like,
consultants telling you to jizz on tits.
Just come on her tits, don't ask. I guess it's like, you know, like... Because they're coming in, like I'm the doctor and that's the paramedic. And so the paramedic's job is to bring the patient from the outside world into A&E.
Yeah.
And often, like, you know, maybe half the time, the patient's a little bit unwell and you have to tend to the patient. As in like half the time, they're not like critically unwell.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
they're like half the time, they're a little bit more unwell than bad. And so like the paramedic's there, like giving you handover, like this is the age, this is what happened. And you're just like, oh, don't look at her ass, don't look at her ass. And you're like, and so I'm not really listening.
I think it's a good thing you left medicine.
But, you know, like it's half going in, half getting muddled up with other thoughts.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, and so then it's like, okay, now I need to care
you
for
turn
the,
to
patient.
The patient. Something about her so, arms, yeah, right? Yeah.
But now you're like, when is the window?
Yeah.
Where you? Because you can't just go, hey, listen, can I have your number? Yeah. I want to take you out, you know. Or
you're not in the coffee room together.
So there's no like, you kind of need to see them multiple times, but it's London Ambulance Service. They go all over the place.
Yeah.
But I've wanted to ask ambulance workers out many, many times, but I never mustered up the courage. Unfortunately, and they wear very, very tight trousers.
Yeah, yes.
You've noticed this. I've actually said,
well, they are though. It's kind of mad.
It's really ass-tastic.
And they have like pockets and stuff like this. But yeah, because I have a friend who used to be a paramedic and stuff.
Unnecessarily ass-tastic.
I played hockey with her, and so like hockey players generally have good arses because you're like bent over. It's like thighs and glutes is what you're using and stuff like this. And I weirdly ran into her one day. She was like being a paramedic at an event. And I was like walking in and I was like, oh my God, hey. And whatever else. And I was like, fuck me. Your arse looks incredible at work. I was like, you should wear that out.
I'm surprised TikTok hasn't got on this and like started selling them on Vinted. You know, selling people's paramedic trousers.
Maybe I should not.
Oh, like second, like used like bathwater.
No, not
what?
What?
No, just like the people would wear
not
paramedic
like used,
trousers.
Used
not,
paramedic
like,
forms.
Not actively trying to get the used ones. I just mean like getting
maybe that's
nice
a good market.
Trousers.
That's what I'm saying. Pair of used.
Sammy's now going to go on and be like, let me try to find that paramedic.
I think there's one buyer for that, and that's you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got a lot of money. No, I don't actually. I'm very poor. I can't afford that. Where were we?
I've lost all trail. Ruby?
Let's go with our last question.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, although I have just thought of a really good question to ask.
Oh, God.
A doctor, try and make it quick. Okay. What do you think is the biggest save you've ever made in work? And this could be like a life I saved, or it could be like you saved your own skin.
Both.
Okay, go on.
Somebody came in and let me just check the anonymity. Basically, I made a diagnosis that everyone else, including the A&E consultant until that stage, had missed.
This is what I mean.
But it's a kind of diagnosis. It's a very broad diagnosis, so I can say what it is. It was opiate overdose because the person was given too much codeine by their previous doctor. And it was a man who's a little bit older, so he was susceptible. And the entire A&E team saw him.
Intake.
The consultant referred it to me. And then I was like, yeah, this is that. And you just squeeze the naloxone and they wake up. And it was a really wonderful feeling. For me, not for the guy.
That's instant gratification of you being right if they wake up immediately.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
And that's one of them where, because he was old and probably had some medical issue that he was given the codeine, everyone was looking
exactly.
at that and not.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
See, so, this is why I'd love to be.
Yeah.
That happens every week in Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah. So that was really satisfying.
Yeah, I can imagine so.
Yeah.
Because it's also, one, okay, yes, I've saved this man's life. It's two, it's like, fuckers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's the point you ask for the paramedic's number. After that's happened.
Yes.
You look like a boss, then you ask.
Yeah.
It's a shame I'm not going back to work ever.
Oh, well,
again.
You'll just have to search Fender for the trousers. Okay, Ruby, take it away.
Okay, so our last question of the podcast is, in hindsight, what job did you learn the most from or has been the most valuable to you?
Oh, wow. 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 Can I take a minute?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And this can be like a practical skill. I don't know, like you medicine. Can save lives or, you know, a life
maybe,
lesson.
Maybe you learned something while underneath the table shaking wires yeah. during your TV internship.
Falling asleep at a cashier.
I know, right? The job I learned the most from would be... Well, the thing is, right? I think this is a really boring answer, but no. I think... I've been in an institution in medicine from day one at med school right through the NHS.
Yeah.
And by sort of taking the jump of leaving and going and doing comedy, I've learned how to like build myself up as a person as well, because when your entire value depends on an institution and structures that already exist, you actually don't learn how to make yourself as a person. And I don't mean like being a self-made man, like financially or anything. It's much more like spiritual than that.
Yeah. Mm.
And what doing comedy for like quite a while now, whatever it is, 8 years, has taught me is like, first of all, obviously how to like know yourself enough to go on stage, but also how to thrust yourself into the world and like be like, hey, I'm here, you know, yeah. and this is what I do, and sort of being your own being your own cheerleader.
Oh yeah, yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, yeah,
and
yeah,
being your own biggest fan and yeah, your own yeah. biggest believer, right? That's what that, because you can feel really shit about yourself in a job, in an institution, in a corporate job or in the NHS.
Yeah.
You can feel really shit about yourself and have really low self-esteem and get really far.
Yeah.
And I think,
or have everyone yeah. go, but you, it's great because you're a grade 8 registrar.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
you've ticked the boxes, yeah, but inside it's all just fucking dripping cancer and tar and stuff.
Yeah,
and
you have these like badges stuff. And quality. Sorry. It's there.
It's a very poignant point that you've made.
Yeah.
I feel like, yeah, that's, I don't like it sitting with me too much.
But it has, yeah, it's like there's something like, you know, you have to kind of, you have to be your own person.
No, I recently went back to work here in office and got made redundant, but in a corporate structure, and it was interesting, like so many of the people there, even though it was like in like live entertainment and stuff like this, so there was so much, all of them had like only ever worked in an office, in a corporate environment, da, da, da. And none of them could understand that I did comedy on set.
Yeah, yeah,
it's one of them where it's like, there's people who have always been in a structure. And I remember being like, oh, I don't understand. And even like for my age and sort of my like experience, I'm at a lower rank than I should be. And yeah. I'm definitely able to do that, but I hadn't been through the ranks, yeah. so I wasn't there. And so you can also feel like, I weirdly felt, I was like, oh, this is feeling a bit shit that I'm with people who are a bit younger and way less experienced than me or whatever else. But then you will also realize that you're like, oh yeah, but the people more senior have literally never done anything. Like I would be like, oh, that's how that, and they'd be like, how do you know that?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, yeah. practical knowledge. Yeah. And like, yeah. and it's that thing of, again, I can imagine doctors being so like, this, but anything self-sufficient, like I can imagine there's people that you probably work with who are so like, how do you do it? Like, people can't believe that I just signed up for an open mic night and put myself on stage.
Just doing it, yeah. That, like, you just got to, the biggest block is here.
You do it.
The biggest block is here
100%.
For us. You know, and it's like when you just release those ideas about yourself, you can do anything.
Yeah.
You can try to do anything. And you can, like, start doing anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, yeah.
I think the thing that resonated the most with me was the fact that, like, when you're in a job, then you get validation from other people and, like, from the position that you're in, and you're like, here are the numbers about how well you're doing, and this is your quarterly review, and this is this, and so you get reviewed, and so then, like, not really true for everyone, but then if you're feeling shit, then it's like, oh, it doesn't matter, because on paper, you're doing well.
Yeah.
And then when you go and, like, you're freelance, or you're working for yourself, there's no one, or there's no, like, no one saying, you're doing a good job, or there's no, like, ticking off, this is what, so you have to go, oh, fuck, I have to pick myself up every day and make me go do this thing that I want to do.
Yeah.
And that change, when it finally implements for yourself, when you make it go, okay, I'm making this work, then you've like that confidence that's added on top of you. Yeah, you feel very powerful. And people go, how do you do that? And it's like, well, applying for festivals, applying for gigs, applying for stuff is an insane thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
ultimately mad. Mm. But then, yeah, it is that thing.
But the world is building. Like the thing I've learned is like, the biggest lesson I've learned, I think, through life, that if I have kids, one of the most important things I'm going to tell them is the world is just people. It's just, even institutions, it's just, it's just people who are idiots, who are like find things hard and fuck up and like and have like soft spots and sensitivities and insecurities. The world is just people. Like that's
and it's also there's no rules or it's all the rules and all the structure is just what some people decided.
Yeah.
So it's all malleable and movable and changeable.
Yeah.
It's like the astronauts up in space looking down on the world.
There you go.
This is all just one planet. Why have we made all these rules up?
Yeah, nothing exists.
What a full circle moment.
Ooh, beautiful.
Oh, on that note, Sammy Abdulwari, thank you so much for coming on the Odd Jobs podcast.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yay.
Oh, what a good episode.
Oh, much fun.
So, honestly, so much fun, so many laughs. Like, delight to have the wonderful Sammy come on to the podcast. I'm sure all the listeners agree. For any listeners who loved The Sound of Sammy and would love to go see him, the award-winning show that we mentioned at the top of the episode, he is on tour with that show. So when? I think all throughout March, April, all around the UK, he's...
Some dates have already happened, but he's all over the place. We were saying the list earlier, and I was like, I think we could just say across the UK.
It is across the United Kingdom, let me tell you that for free. He's playing a town I've literally never even heard of before. So it is a thorough tour. And also for any Londoners who are annoyed because they've missed out on a Soho Theatre run, he is doing a work in progress at the Pleasance Theatre on the 17th of March. St. Patrick's Day for anyone listening. So.
I thought it was at the Pleasance, not Soho Theatre.
It is at the Pleasance. I just lied. He did the run of his tour at Soho Theatre, but his work in progress is at Pleasance. I got mixed up.
There we go.
I read all his dates and I just jumbled them all up.
You see that?
We didn't try to do the tour.
That was active listening right there.
Well done, Ruby. You're better at it than I am. I wasn't even active talking. So, but that's Sammy. And if you don't, go follow him on socials as well. He makes great skits and sketches and all sorts.
Yeah, so he's working towards, and we have an Odd Jobs announcement, don't we?
We do, from us at the Odd Jobs podcast. Slightly sad announcement, but we will be taking a small bit of a hiatus.
Yes, we're using up our holiday days.
Yeah,
we've got to use them all up before April.
This is it. Well, the year, the what do you call it? The business year end in March. We've got to use these up.
Yeah. Or is it when people go on pilgrimage? Maybe I'm going on a pilgrimage.
Are you going
People
on
do
pilgrimage?
That. They get to have like time off from work for going on a pilgrimage.
You mean a sabbatical?
That's the one.
Yeah,
that's
a pilgrimage is a religious thing, Ruby.
Sabbatical also sounds religious.
It can be. There is a term. Yes, I understand what you mean. But pilgrimage, no. You're not walking the Camino. You're not going to Knock. You're not doing Lourdes. I don't even think you even know the three things I just referenced there. But all the Catholics listening
I
understand.
I know that there's a big walk in Spain.
The Camino de Santiago, there you go. Actually, the Camino de Compostela or something it's called. Well, it goes south of Santiago. Yeah, and then you can go dunk yourself in the baths in Lourdes. I've done that many times. Or you can go see the shrine in Knock. Again, I've done it myself. So,
these would sound like great activities for me to be doing on our holiday days away, but it's actually because we've both got quite busy.
We've got quite busy. I'm also going to be based in Ireland in the next little bit. And yeah, we basically, ironically enough, our odd jobs are keeping us away from doing the Odd Jobs podcast. Ironic, I know. But we hope to be back soon with more great guests chatting about more odd jobs. And we'll have more stories about our odd jobs to tell, I'm sure. But thank you so much for listening. If you haven't, we have, I believe, 17, 18 episodes out. So you can always catch up on all the episodes we've had. Every guest had some amazing stories.
Yeah.
Also, follow myself, Kat Higgins, and Ruby Carr, Ruby Vroom Vroom, on Instagram, on socials. Keep up to date with any shows we're doing. We'll both be doing more work in progresses, previews, as we get shows ready for the Edinburgh Fringe. And keep your eyes peeled for hopefully when we are back with more episodes soon.
Right. And we love you very much. Thank you for being our amazing listeners during these 17 episodes. And as I said, if you've missed any, go back, listen to them.
Catch up. Also, sign up to the Patreon for free. All our tea breaks are there. So you can catch us up on all the tea breaks. And yeah, we'll be hope to be back to you soon.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.